Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. On this day after Thanksgiving, I have a holiday treat for you. Anatoly Lieberman is in the studio this hour, and we're talking words and language. The dictionaries are proclaiming their word of the year. Oxford has declared toxic to be the word of 2018. Linguist Jeff Nunberg believes nationalist should be the word of 2018. How about you? Which word would you anoint as the word of the year? And tell me why. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. Now, listen to this. I mean, it could be a word that was a word of the year, I don't know, 5 years ago, and you want to bring it back. Or it's a new word that you've just heard and begun using, and you think, in some ways, it captures who and where we are in this moment. So word of the year, the one that you would define and anoint for 2018, what is it? 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000 on Twitter, at Carrie NPR. Anatoly Lieberman is a professor of languages at the University of Minnesota, an etymologist and the author of Word Origins and How We Know Them. Welcome. So kind of you to come in on the day after Thanksgiving. Really nice to have you here.
It was very kind of you to invite me on this Black Friday.
Yeah, Black Friday. You know, I heard somebody, I think it was David Brancaccio, who does Marketplace, say the word Black Friday has always confused him. That, I mean, because it sounds negative, and yet it has, in the economics and retail world, it's got a positive connotation to it.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And I have also been wondering for years what is so unpleasant or black. But then Black Friday is probably not as black as it is painted.
Meaning?
Meaning that it's a very good day. People buy and buy things and are very happy. So there is nothing to be afraid of, except for the crowds that can smash you.
That's true. I happened to drive by the parking lot of Menards. It was so crowded, cars were spilling out onto the side streets. It was crazy. Okay, Anatoly, first, before we get to this, an email for you, basically, to me, just in the last couple of days. Here's Betty, who emailed to say, "Hi, Carrie. I've noticed, sadly, the lack of proper grammar usage by many of the younger newscasters on NPR and NPR. It makes me crazy. What has happened? Is proper grammar no longer taught in schools? Don't broadcasting schools teach expect proper use of the English language? In the past, you've had conversations about language with a man whose name escapes me. Can you talk with him again and again? And perhaps find out why these young reporters are not educated properly. You are the man I think she was remembering, and you're the man I must bring this to." What would you say, Anatoly?
Well,
about
I have
this?
So much to say that I'm afraid to begin, because that will then, if I start, I won't know when and how to finish.
I'll stop you. Don't worry.
All right.
Go
thank
ahead.
You. Yeah, I know. You are very good at it. So let me say only a few words. First of all, grammar is not taught at our schools, because somebody invented a terrible tag or a terrible label for it, that grammar is not fun. And of course, everything should be fun. For example, someone is hiring people now and they promise a fun environment. Instead of program notes at our orchestra hall, I see that the title is Fun Facts. This is what drives me crazy. This is the word of the year, indeed. The word fun, I think it's the word
fun of the... Fun is the word of the year of 2018.
Well, I don't know. It's the word of the century. It's the word of our generation, of our epoch. In any case, grammar is not taught. I know it because I teach all languages, and I always teach grammar, and people, believe it or not, enjoy it. But you have to go through all those things, and this is a very hard process. If you don't teach young people, then they will grow up and they won't teach their pupils or children. Let me give you a few things here to explain what I mean. Let us not forget that when people begin to say something and when they begin to use a certain variant, and if it's become universal, then there is no hope to fight against it. For example, the famous confusion of lie and lay down and have a rest. Now, that's definitely wrong. But since everybody says so, it's correct.
It's just become the thing we say.
Yes, that's...
Everybody knows what we mean.
Absolutely so.
What's wrong with that?
Well, because it's lie. You lie and you lay something which is a transitive verb. You lay things, that is, put them wherever they belong. Or take another example, which is my favorite. This is a quotation from a student. The student, and then it has become almost proverbial between me and my friends, the mood of the stories are gloomy.
Ah, yes.
Well, that's the famous agreement, universal. The derivation of some words are unknown. And when I complained to my students and said, but that's wrong, the answer was so convincing. Yes, but it flows. Whether it flows in the correct direction, in the proper direction, is very hard to tell. So there are two situations. One is that what becomes universal becomes our norm, and there is no hope to fight against it. It's a lost battle.
Cheery note, yes, go ahead.
And on the other hand, there are some things which should be corrected because they're just definitely wrong, and they're not corrected because there is no good education in grammar. And reporters are, believe it or not, human beings. So they're not better or worse than the rest of the world.
Nicely said. By the way, Betty, I do not hear a lot of these grammatical errors that you're spotting, but it could be because I have just succumbed to the flow. And I believe that if it's being used that way, fine, we all understand what they're saying. All right, Anatoly, on to Word of the Year. We have a number of people who want to get in and anoint their Word of the Year. You ready?
Well, I'm absolutely ready.
Here we go, to Manish in Minneapolis. Hi, Manish. What is your prospective word of 2018?
Good morning. This is Manish. Gay uncle is my word, which is guncle, G-U-N-C-L-E.
I love that. Do you hear that a lot, Manish? I don't run into conversations where that's coming up a lot.
Yeah, if you have a few Facebook friends who are gay, you will see that word a lot.
Guncle. Okay, guncle. Spotting up on social media. Okay, this makes a lot of sense. You know, Anatoly, I like the idea that we are shortening two words, gay uncle, into guncle. And everybody knows what we mean, apparently, or soon will.
Well, yes, you are right. Blends have absolutely overpowered us. I think that last year, either the OED or Webster proclaimed the word youth quake as the word of the year.
That's right.
If I remember it correctly. And this is a moderately funny word, which I liked. Many other blends are silly. Some are witty. For example, there is a school in Florida which is called Benjamin School, and they have a group of engineers, of course, they're students, they're kids, and they're called, since it's a Benjamin School, a group of Benjineers. Well, that's not bad.
That's pretty good.
That's not bad. But blends are everywhere. Some of them are funny, some of them are not, but they're evanescent. They certainly cannot become words of the year.
I didn't like youth quake. Nobody, I've never heard anybody say it.
Neither have I.
So how can it be a word of the year if nobody ever says it?
Well, it's probably in all newspapers, or it was in all newspapers. Mm. They have their own criteria of what to choose and which word to choose. Also, they have people writing them about the word of the year. I do not exactly know how it happens, but I know that in Germany there is a craze. Tens of thousands of people write letters to the editors saying, this is the word of the year, this is the word of the year.
Really?
And so the result of the competition is that they finally choose the most popular candidate.
I love that. Yeah. Here's John in Minneapolis who called in with a German word, by the way, that should be word of the year, Schadenfreude. And I love this because Alexander McCall Smith and I at Talking Volumes had a nice conversation about Schadenfreude. There is no English word that exactly translates to it, is there, Anatoly?
That's absolutely correct. There are a few German words which have made their way into Webster. I don't know whether it means anything or not, but you can find them. Three, four, or perhaps even five German words, such as Zeit, Geist, the spirit of the time, for example, or Lebensraum, the terrible word meaning living space, that is, we're short of territory, so we must expand, and Schadenfreude, which is indeed very hard to translate, because it means the joy, the malicious joy you experience when someone else is in trouble. The malicious joy is that I'm not in trouble, someone else is in trouble, and I giggle clandestinely at the misery of my neighbor. It may not be a very neighborly feeling, but it's a very common feeling and a very well-known word. I tried to look up how they translate Thanksgiving into French, German, and so on, and they all write Thanksgiving.
Ah. Nancy says on Twitter, I suggest the word of the year should be dissembling. Gordon says cacophony seems to speak to the present time. That's one of my favorite words. I love that word. To Linda in Burnsville. Linda, what's your nomination for Word of 2018?
I have you on speaker, so I hope this comes through okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Transparency. It's used a lot now, and it lends positivity. And the concept is needed in our negative atmospheres and politics.
Ah, okay.
So
Anatoly, I think transparency. It's a word we find ourselves reading a lot and saying a lot.
Yeah, I agree. You remember that some time ago, either a year ago or some time ago, I can't remember when, we talked about buzzwords and cliches.
Yes.
And it's very hard to draw this line. Are we talking about something that has the honor of becoming a good word? That is, do we think that the word of the year is something to be proud of?
Right.
Or is it a word which we should hate because it has been overused? I'm not quite sure. I think that most of these words are simply cliches and buzzwords. But I agree about transparency. The word, quoting you, has driven me crazy. Every time when someone is hired, when someone is discussed, everybody looks at his or her neighbors and says, do you think this candidate will be transparent enough? I think we're all now made of glass. That is a bit frightening.
When someone overuses the word transparent, I become immediately suspicious that they are not.
That's very true. It's just like someone who looks so shockingly honest that you suspect that this person is probably a thief.
Call here from Randall in Minneapolis. Randall, what's your nomination? Word of the year.
Well, I'm not sure if you would consider it a word or a compound word, whatever. But
okay.
The point being is flux velocity.
What?
Now, what that means,
okay, yeah.
Flux velocity,
okay.
What that means is everything is in a state of flux, but it's moving at the speed of velocity. For example, we don't know what's going to happen or the outcomes from AI, machine learning, neural networking, or CRISP technology and precision medicine.
Okay.
And it just goes on and on in that capacity.
Okay,
and that's what I think our times are.
I like this, Randall, because it's got a futuristic sense to it. And in some ways, Anatoly, I like the idea that our words of 2018 are looking ahead to try to project and predict what's coming.
Well, you may be right, though it's better not to indulge in futurology. One never knows whether one's prophecy will come true or not. But this is, again, one of those blends. People love those blends. I must say that this is a rather late fashion. It seems to me, if you remember, these words appeared more or less with Alice in Wonderland, where they were called portmanteau words.
Ah,
if someone still remembers.
Words, yes.
They're portmanteau words.
That's
when
good.
Something like motel from motor and hotel, or a smog from two words from smoke and fog.
Ah.
These were portmanteau words. Probably very few people remember this term, but it was quite common some time ago. Then the word blend was used, also a very old word and a very old term. By old, I mean more than 100 years old, which is quite old for our usage. And they were rare. If you try to remember some really classic examples, all those motels and smog and come to mind. There were not very many, but now there is a flood of these words. Some of them, as I said, are excellent. Some are moderately funny. Some are volatile and evanescent and will probably disappear very soon. But it's fun to put them together.
Who better to spend this holiday Friday with than Anatoly Lieberman? We are talking word of the year. A couple of different dictionaries have declared their word of the year. Oxford with toxic. Merriam, I think, with nationalist. We'll talk about that. And Anatoly and I want to know what your word of the year for 2018 would be and why. 651-227-6000. 800-242-2828 on Twitter at Carrie NPR, where Leah says, I like the word grifter for 2018. Chris says gaslighting. What would yours be on Twitter? It's at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I, M-P-R. Anatoly, let's say something about toxic. I find this interesting because toxic is popping up. Toxic political environments, toxic social media, toxic masculinity in the Me Too movement. Listen to how Oxford described how they came to the conclusion of toxic.
In its original literal use, to refer to poisonous substances, toxic has been ever-present in discussions of the health of our communities and our environment, with toxic air, toxic algae, toxic chemicals, toxic fumes, toxic waste, and even toxic slime hitting the headlines. Not to mention the continued public condemnation of the toxicity of plastics. And it's not just the physical being touted as toxic this year. Toxic has truly taken off into the realm of metaphor as people have reached for the word to describe workplaces, schools, cultures, relationships, and stress, lending a personal angle to this year of toxicity.
So do you find that persuasive? Their reasoning? What? You're torn. Why?
Well, I don't know how persuasive these things are. I know how these things happen. What is hard to ascertain or find out is who the first genius was who used toxic metaphorically. Because toxic about chemicals is not a big deal. That's where the word really belongs. Someone said it, but that's the fate of all words. And that's how all words were coined in the past. Using even our simplest words, bread and butter, all of them were such. Someone coined them, someone liked them, and then they became popular. The problem is that bread is no longer a buzzword. It just calls what we know bread to be. Mm-hmm. And when a certain metaphor becomes everybody's favorite, then it turns into a cliche, and there is some danger that people will use a word simply because everybody does it, and there is some touch of being fashionable. Oh, everybody is transparent. Everything is toxic. You use these words, and you begin to look cleverer than you really are because you are part of the crowd.
Something I aspire to all the time, looking cleverer than I really am.
Well, I think that's our destiny. I'm sorry to say. If we want to stay alive, we have to pretend busily. So I'm not a great fan of these words, and I try not to use them.
No.
That's really all I can say. Whether it is the word of the year or of the century, I think the century is huge and large enough to use it without me. So I'd rather use words that few people know so that they will look up and say, now, what does that mean? I'm always pleased when that happens. That means someone's vocabulary will be enriched.
A call here from Sarah in St. Paul. Sarah, thank you for waiting. What's your word of the year? Sarah, are you there? Uh-oh. We might have lost Sarah. She
waited
too long. All right. Sarah, hello. No. To Tom in Minneapolis. Hi, Tom. Did you wait for us?
Yes, I'm here.
Thanks. What's your word of the year? What'd you want to say?
I think the most overused word from the decade is just. I think it's the smurfification of adverbs because people simply remove an adverb and put in the word just.
Smurfification. Explain to me what that is.
Well, like the show, the Smurfs, they would use the word smurf to represent pretty much any other word.
Ah, okay. Got it.
You know,
so
we just substitute that word in. So the word just is simply used to replace any other adverb. Mm-hmm. So you want to say simply,
okay.
You say just instead. You want to say quickly or whatever. Almost every adverb can be replaced by the word just.
Okay, this is an interesting.
This is a very correct
it's
observation.
It's lazy. It's lazy kind of adverb use, right?
Absolutely right. People are very often at a loss for a word. To speak well is very hard. It's sometimes harder than even to do good things. A good orator, an eloquent orator, is an important person. And when you have to speak and have very little to say, then you fill your speech with all kinds of verbal junk. We know that, of course, from the eternal discussion about the word like, which is the word of the decades, really.
Decades.
Yes, decades. Oh. I use the plural intentionally of the decades. It's like, and then you finish something that is totally insignificant and add wisely, you know. Well, of course, if you know it and I know it, it's very important. The same thing as was quite correctly said with the word just. You can use just before anything, and it fills the pause, and you look smart when you used it. Or some people say, well, every moment. Well, I'm not sure. Well, whether I'll be able to do it. Well, you know how it is. It's like this. I wanted like to say it. Well, I'm not sure what I'm going to say. So what did you hear? Nothing. Just a stream of useless words. It's a cesspool of verbal iniquity.
We've talked about your students using the word like too often. Have you given up on that? Have you also begun to pepper every sentence with two or three likes?
No, I'll die a soldier.
yes?
I'm not going to give up.
And, thank God.
Yes, and they all know that as students, those students whose vocabulary consists of three words, awesome, fascinating, and like, should change their ways.
Hope you're hearing this loud and clear for the next semester. To Kristen, listening on the way to Nebraska. Oh, Kristen, what's the word?
Well, the word is neologism. Neologism.
Why?
Well, I don't have a dictionary with me, but I think it refers to coining new words or using old words in new ways.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And I think that, you know, there are things unprecedented popping up in politics right now.
Uh-huh.
And kind of slang, you know, and kids using, not just kids, but people texting and abbreviating things and then using the abbreviations instead of the original word.
Mm-hmm.
And so chopping words off and stretching things and quoting the president when he even misuses words and then people repeating it as a joke and then it sort of finds its way into the regular vocabulary. And
that is a really good observation that I wanted to ask Anatoly about. But first, neologism. Does she have the right definition there?
Neologism is simply a freshly minted word.
Okay.
A new word that has crept in, has just crept in, or has been coined by an author. Very often poets use neologisms. It's an individual word which doesn't yet exist. And it's rather hard to think of a new word. But now, of course, as we have heard with texting and with many other ways of expressing our thoughts in an abbreviated form, some neologisms appear. Many of our abbreviations, for example, were neologisms only 10, 15, 20 years ago. Once, I think, we spoke about LOL. which is one of the few abbreviations everybody knows. Well, it was a neologism. And if someone misuses a word, especially someone in power, and some people, as we have just heard, begin first to mock this usage and then imitate it, well, this neologism, which was not meant to be a neologism, suddenly becomes popular. That's very true.
I like what she said about you might see the president use a certain word and then people chuckle over it. And then we find ourselves using that word to refer perhaps to what he was talking about. Then it just kind of escapes into the word culture.
And then, yes, and then it's a runaway word.
Right.
Yes,
yeah.
That's true.
Frank has come up with one of my favorite words, which is dotard.
Well, that was also caught from a rather unpleasant episode from the correspondence between the two presidents, as we all know. The word is, incidentally, rather rare in English.
Is it? Why?
Well, it. How often do you remember hearing it before you read it in a famous exchange in a newspaper? It's a bookish word, meaning someone who is out of his mind, because that's the old meaning of the verb to dote. To dote on someone was to be stupid in relation to someone. Today it means to be excessively fond of something. And A-R-D, a suffix as in the word niggard, for example, which is a stingy person. Niggard is a word of Scandinavian origin, and the root doesn't exist in English. But the suffix is there, and doted. So dote is a rather bookish word, and doted, humorous, mildly humorous. And then the word, also don't forget that the word was used in Korean. It is somebody's translation of the Korean word into English. We don't know what the word was.
Right.
So someone translated it, probably translated it very well. I have no way of knowing because I don't know the language. And the word was new. And since it was fresh, everybody immediately remembered it. And then the context was, of course, so appealing. And then doted caught the world, and it suddenly became a very popular word. It will probably die because there is no context for it. If you want to call someone an idiot, a fool, and there are dozens of such words, you probably won't naturally say doted or you doted.
Not if you and I, Anatoly, commit to keeping it alive. Can we do that?
No, I don't know. I think words can very well fend for themselves.
On Twitter, tweetstorm is my vote, dog whistle from Colleen, and a listener who says optics is my word of the year, sadly because politicians are increasingly concerned with the PR impact of their decisions and actions and less concerned with making good policy. Boy, optics is one of those words that just seem to appear one day, and everybody needed to use it, including cable. I think the cable news industry is also responsible for some of these words just popping out and spreading like wildfire.
Yeah, no, yeah. No doubt about that. These are the popular channels of transmission, and millions of people listen to those voices and then repeat these words. Did you notice that we are not speaking only about words today, but about concepts, really.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. To the phones to Judah in Sartell. Hi, Judah.
It's Judith.
Okay. Judith, I'm sorry. What's your word of the year?
This is an ancient word that's being used right now struck me as really showing so much about what's happening politically and between groups of people, tribe and tribalism.
Mm-hmm.
And it speaks worldwide, and it made so much sense to me when I heard that word used in our political scene with this divide that seems to be a gap that we're having a really hard time closing. And, you know, you read the Old Testament, and so much of what happens is based on tribalism, and you talk about tribes all over the world, and
So suddenly we're hearing the word a lot and we're trying to understand how it applies to our political culture, right, and our social culture.
Absolutely correct. That's exactly the way it is.
Colleen adds to this, Anatoly, tribalism, this seems to be the polite way we're describing the country and strong feelings about our government right now. Is it a more polite way to talk about the, what, we use the word polarization, the divisions?
Well, words are polite or impolite depending on what we think about them. In themselves, they are neither. But the observation is correct in principle. There are words which are so obviously offensive or unpleasant or bring such unpleasant associations that we try to use, I don't know to what extent the word euphemism is universally understood, but a euphemism is something, a word which you use in order not to, in order to avoid something unpleasant. That is, physiological functions and so on. In these cases, we use polite words, the name, some parts of our anatomy, which we don't want to call the way we all know they're called, and all kinds of verbs and so on. Well, sneeze, for example, is a word which is quite polite and nice, and there is nothing wrong with it. But there are other words which are not so good, so we try to use better words. For example, at one time in the famous days of what we now call Victorian English, the word trousers was unpronounceable because it was so shocking.
Oh.
Trousers, you know, you have trousers. Don't you know what is under the trousers? Oh, that's not something polite ladies and gentlemen should speak, especially in a mixed company. So all kinds of words like indescribables, which you still find in Dickens, for pants and for trousers exist. So we do the same thing in order to take the edge off a politically offensive word. We constantly use other words. So that is a true observation. And these euphemisms are useful because they're less offensive, less shocking, and then they will be replaced with other euphemisms, and that's the way these things go.
If you've just tuned in, I'll bet you recognize the voice and dulcet tones of Anatoly Lieberman in the studio on this Friday after Thanksgiving. We're talking about the word of the year. Dictionaries like to declare a word of the year, and Anatoly and I have come into the studio to ask you what your word of the year, what would you anoint as the key word of 2018, and tell me why. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. If you're running into a busy signal on the phone lines, you can get to me on Twitter, at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. Anatoly, I'm interviewing Bob Woodward on December 3rd about his book, Fear. And I read your blog post from this summer on the origin of the word fear. And you, and this was very interesting in that post. The words fear and afraid, while they would seem to be linked, developed independently of one another. Do I have that right?
Yes, absolutely correct. And that's a very usual thing. Words sound alike, and we think they're certainly related. Then we study their history or their etymology. You know, I use the word etymology all the time, and one of my few achievements is that those who know me personally no longer confuse etymology and entomology.
The bug probably, guy and the word guy.
Yeah, that's right. so that's probably not much to boast of, but I'm very proud of my small achievement. So it's absolutely true. Words look like close relatives, and then it turns out that they have come together late in life. So what you read in that blog was correct.
Call here from Angela in Duluth. Hi, Angela.
Good morning.
Hey.
My favorite word is majestic,
I
as
like
in
that
the
word.
Newly released film Above Majestic. Now, prior to the release of this film, I thought of that word as a description of a beautiful mountain view. But now, after this movie, I see the word majestic as meaning helping people to be transparent and connecting those dots for viewers to provide information that gives a majestic view of information.
Ah.
And will be very helpful, I believe, for people.
Okay, so this is I would think of Majestic as wide and sweeping. And in some ways, the way you've used it after seeing this movie fits, but it isn't just a natural way that we would describe that, is it?
Correct. And that is how words change, or rather how their meanings change. They suddenly acquire new meanings, new senses, which are unexpected. There are two processes. One is the broadening of meaning, and one is the narrowing of meaning. And the narrowing of meaning is sometimes amazing, or sometimes people speak about the amelioration of meaning and deterioration of meaning. Let me give you an example which is very amusing. The word fond. I'm very fond of you. I'm very fond of being here. I'm very fond of answering questions. All that is totally non-controversial.
Mm-hmm.
The word meant stupid not too long ago.
Huh.
When King Lear, at the end, now finally no longer blind and knowing very well what is truth and what is not, says that he was a fond old man. That means he admits that he was a fool. The word has changed its meaning. If you want to understand what King Lear says, you have to look it up in a commentary. It may happen to the word majestic after the movie. When people begin to use the word in a new meaning, then somebody will say you are misusing the word. Then these critics will die out and a new meaning will appear. And people will begin to ask, did majestic really mean that? So that's the way of all linguistic flesh.
It's good. Jeff says, okay, I might cheat a little bit, but 2018 was the year of confirmation bias. Everyone sees what they want to see or hear or believe. There was a lot of use of the phrase confirmation bias. As with some of these other words that were suddenly popping up, tribalism, we all wanted to understand, okay, well, how does that apply to us and the culture that we're living in today? So we give more thought to some of these words and phrases.
Yes, sometimes because the word is used so often that you cannot... incidentally, I keep saying often, even though everybody around me says often.
Yeah.
But to me, often...
Notice that.
Yeah, I don't know. often to me, like whistle or listen. I prefer to stay without my tea. And I apologize to our listeners who probably do say often. But I prefer to be conservative in this respect. That's absolutely true, what you said. And I have... no objections. Confirmation bias or not is something that we see not only often, frequently, but something that we cannot avoid. This avalanche of political propaganda or linguistic propaganda, when we simply find ourselves buried under the political slang or political usage of the day, then quite unconsciously, we begin to use this word simply because we have heard it so many times. It becomes a word or the word of the year, and whether it is a compliment or not is not entirely clear, to put it mildly.
Call from John in Rochester. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your word of the year?
Iteration. I was reading a Maker magazine, and the first five articles by five different authors had it seven times. Iteration or reiteration?
Yes, you are right. You are right. Now, reiteration is rather old. Iteration, I think, was abstracted, so to speak, from reiteration. But the word has nothing to be proud of, if my opinion means anything in this context. In general... using highfalutin Latinized words instead of using proper words. Of course, repetition is also a romance word. There is nothing we can do about it. But repetition is a nice old word. And simply using iteration in order to show how cultured you are, especially people who do not know Latin, adore using Latinized words to show how educated they are. And I also see iteration all the time, and I heartily dislike it.
Patty says, I select personal words to guide us in the coming year rather than summarizing the past year for the world. My 2018 word was mentor, to remind me to be mindful and deliberate in formal leadership in my personal life. My 2019 word is still a question to me, so that will develop at some point for Patty. Kathy says, thrive. Char called on the way to Wisconsin. She says, fake news or wonderstanding. I like wonderstanding. I haven't seen that very often. To Steve in Eden Prairie, hi, Steve, what's your word of 2018? Hi, Steve, you there?
Yeah. I'm here.
What's your word of 2018?
Icon.
Why?
I think, well, it has two usages that, you know, we see it on our screens that are our electronics. Mm-hmm. So that's a part of our life.
Okay.
But it's also so overused to describe anything, it seems, of importance or stature.
It's true.
And it drives me absolutely crazy.
The value of the word is diminished because we apply it to so many things.
Of its incessant repetition.
Right. Yes.
Correct. Correct. And, of course, icons have become famous because of our computer life, that we see the icon, the word icon and icons all the time. And icons was only a picture of a saint or of the Christian God. That was an icon. And then an icon became something that is iconic. And now there is a word iconicity, which is a technical linguistic term. Everything is fine in moderation. And when, as Steve said, when a word is used until it makes you sick, then it's better to stay away politely.
Don't use
possible.
It. Right. On Twitter, a listener says, unhinged. This is a good observation. Politicians have begun using this word very liberally to characterize their opposition as mentally unstable or emotionally compromised. One of those words that is overused and therefore, again, the purpose and the value of it is diminished, but also an insulting word for somebody who simply disagrees with you.
Yeah, unhinged, of course, will mean that one cannot control oneself, that the person doesn't know how to behave, whereas we who are against this person, we are, of course, hinged, obviously.
My goal is to be hinged through 2019. Okay, to Rachel in Bloomington. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
What'd you want to add to this?
I wanted to ask, because my favorite word for 2019, I believe, is going to be the word you used with Alexander McCall Smith when you were talking about the word that cannot really be translated.
Schadenfreude.
Could you spell that for me?
I will ask Anatoly to spell that for you. He's the German language expert
okay.
here.
Which can it be? You mean the Schadenfreude?
Schadenfreude, oh, yeah.
S C H A D E N. That's the end of the first part.
Schaden.
Okay.
Schaden. Then comes Freude. F R E U D E. Unfortunately, German is full of terribly long words, so that when people are paid, for example, for translating from English into German, they say, I'll be paid for the number of English words in the text, because the number of German words will be probably three times smaller. So Schadenfreude is, of course, a compound word. And if you look it up, you will find it in not only on the internet, but everywhere, in Webster, in the Oxford English Dictionary, in the OED. It has been anglicized, if one can be allowed to use such a verb.
So Rachel, you will be using Schadenfreude at the precisely perfect moments in 2019. Is that right?
I will never use such a word.
I was using it yesterday at Thanksgiving because I was telling my family about the conversation, because I'm continually fascinated by words that cannot be translated. Because I always think, I mean, especially a word that has something to do with emotion, I always think, well, emotions are universal, and, you know, we could go to the farthest tribe of wherever, and people would say, oh, yeah, I know what that is. And when I brought this up yesterday at you know, a conversation at dinner, people kind of said, oh, yeah, I don't know if I've experienced that. And I said, oh, of course you have. And it just was interesting to me as an emotional intelligence topic, that if we don't have a word, then maybe we don't have the concept for it.
But you know we do have the concept.
Oh, well, yes.
I believe we do have the concept, but I think we're less willing to admit it because it's a long phrase. And it seems like when it's one word, you can, you know, you can call it out and you can say, that's what that is. And maybe people are, hopefully, maybe people are a little bit more willing to be accountable for it.
Yes, you may not know when you are the target of Schadenfreude. Something has happened to you and the people around you are taking a certain amount of malicious joy in your trouble. Right, Anatoly?
Yes, that's the problem, that in certain languages we have words, sometimes extremely apt words, and we don't have good equivalents. That's why people who know foreign languages sometimes say, as they say in French, as they say in German. It doesn't mean that there is no concept. Of course, malicious joy is just the same thing as Schadenfreude. Schadenfreude has only the small advantage of being a word rather than a phrase, if a compound word is a single word. But no doubt, all the feelings are there, all the reactions are there, only you have to find a word for it. So we are not better than the Germans because we don't have this word.
Lisa tweeted in, pet peeve word of 2018, athleisure, as in athleisure wear.
What a word.
It's kind of an elitist word, too. Emoluments, says another listener on Twitter.
Is emoluments something that has crept up much too often? I'm not sure that it's a much more common word today than it was 50 or 60 years ago.
We're seeing it more often, I think.
Really?
Well, because there is some question about the emoluments clause of the Constitution.
Oh, yes. That's probably a temporary thing. But the word as a term or as a legal term has existed for a very long time. And, of course, as you say, there may be a situation that will promote the usage. And then it will die together with the situation.
Call here from Peter in Minneapolis. Hi, Peter.
Good morning.
Hi. What's your word?
Well, my word is sustainability.
Oh, yes.
Or sustainable.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes. That's my favorite enemy. Yes, I'm all the way with you. And I'm not against sustainability. But I cannot hear this word overused so much. That is, it's all the time around us. Sustainable, sustainable, sustainable. Everything is sustainable. Is that sustainable tourism? I beg your pardon? What does that mean? Oh, that is what it means. And everything is sustainable. I think that our talk show is perfectly sustainable. If it can be sustained. But I agree with you, and it's not a word to use out of context. Certain things should be sustainable, and for others, there are other adjectives.
Peter, did you have another question for Anatoly?
I did, yes. Yeah. And I think Anatoly was leading on to something where I agree with. And I think that our society is trying to explain our emotions. And we do not have the vocabulary to explain that.
Mm-hmm.
And I researched, and I've been following this man called John Koenig, and he has actually been on NPR TED Talks, and he is a creator of something called a Dictionary of Obscure Sorrow.
Clever.
He's a wonderful writer who basically creates new words based on just feelings that I think we all share.
Oh, my gosh. I love that. That would be a really fun show.
I will give you one word. I have it right here.
Okay.
This word is called Mori, spelled M-O-R-I-I. That's why I perceive it's pronounced.
Okay.
And this word means the desire to capture a fleeting experience.
Hmm.
And okay. How did he come up
I
with
know,
this
how
word?
Did...
Well, based on
is it because for Memento Mori?
It's just, I think he pulls just words. There's different words using of English. There's different hyphens and you know, diphthongs on vocabulary letters. And it's just, I think it's creative thought. used for a purpose to explain this deep, deep feeling inside of us. And we use words such as like, you know,
to
stand in for our emotions, which we as a society have been shackled to express.
Peter, I'm a little tight on time. I appreciate that. And I'm going to look this guy, The Dictionary of Obscure Sorrow.
What a wonderful title.
That could be a really fun show. Okay, so Anatoly, with about a minute here, what do you see words emerging in I don't know, from your students or in what you're reading that you think this has got some pop to it? I'm going to see more of these words in 2019.
Not really, because whatever here, it's either slang and I either know it or do not know it. If I don't know it, then I ask them what it means. Or it's a word that everybody knows. But I think I once told you about this. About 20 years ago, an undergraduate said to me about something, oh, it's cool. Looked at me suspiciously, not sure of whether I knew this word. And I said, have no fear. I know what cool means. So that's my experience.
Anatoly, such a pleasure to have you come in on the day after Thanksgiving. I'll see you early spring. Would that be cool with you?
That will be awesome.
All right. I'll see you then. Thank you.
Thank you.